All right, Brad, joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair is U.S. Army veteran Don Brutnell. We'll be talking about Vietnam and, of course, Ken Burns and his Vietnam documentary will premiere on PBS over the weekend. And, Don, first of all, welcome to Brad and Dan.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, Brad. I'm glad to be here.
Which years did you serve in Vietnam?
I was there from October of 67 to October 68.
You know, I'll never forget. I happened to be out in California in the Marine Corps, and I met pardon me, some of the veterans, okay, that were then coming back.
Right.
And they had to go in the men's room to take their uniforms off and to put on civilian clothes.
Correct.
Because of the way they were treated by people. I could not believe it, but I saw it.
Well, and when I came back, I came through Fort Lewis, Washington, and they gave you an opportunity to go in and get your uniform cleaned up, pressed and stuff, because you've been on an airplane for so long. And then upon doing that, walking out into the airport, going to the airport through the terminal, it was not pleasant. A lot of people lined up, a lot of boos, a lot of comments being made, a lot of spitting. And so this would have been in October of 68. So the march through the airport to get to my plane to come back to Bradley, it wasn't pleasant. It wasn't pleasant at all.
And
but
You flew choppers over there.
I flew helicopters, yep. I was in a place called Ninh Hoa, which is just north of Nha Trang. And our mission was support of the White Horse Korean Division. And the White Horse Korean Division had a range, but they were supposed to keep Highway 1 open and then any activity within that range from Thuy Hoa to Phan Rang. So we supported them. It's pretty good service. And we did everything from hauling the dignitaries, the generals around to taking their troops into combat. But then I got directed from that operation up to support the Marines. Up in Wei Fu Bai.
A wild group.
Huh? Oh, a wild group. I tell you what.
Love them.
Working with the Marines was a different experience, I'll tell you that.
I know what you mean.
Oh, good God. They were quite a crew, but they were in the hottest area, 67, 68 of Vietnam. And they were up all around Khe San and Camp Carroll, Camp Evans. And they were in the mix of everything. So we, being helicopter support, they had their helicopter shot up pretty bad. So we went up and supplied them with helicopters and getting their supplies in and out, the troops in and out. I was glad to leave and go back to what I was doing, I'll tell you that.
I mean, what was it like? I mean, being over in Vietnam during what was obviously a very controversial war.
I like to say when I was in college, I majored in ROTC. I mean, I wanted career military, so I was gung-ho.
Right.
And then when I got out, it was boom, boom, boom. One set of orders sent me all the way through Fort Eustis to flight school in Texas, to Alabama, to Vietnam, and back. One set of orders.
Wow.
But what was it like over there? Again, gung-ho. And I believed in the mission. I really did. And an eye-opener for me when I first got there, we hauled around the Korean general. So we take him to different areas. Right. Of course, after the activity, they would go in and look around. And I never forget, we got into a hamlet outside of Ninh Hoa. And we came into the hamlet, the village chief and his son were, well, they were dead. They were hanging upside down and mutilated. And the message to the people within that hamlet was, when we come in, the VC, now we're talking about the VC in my area, when we come in, we want the rice, we want support, we want you to tell us what the Americans are doing, whatever information, intelligence, and if you don't, we'll go after others.
It's just gonna happen.
So I saw that and I thought, wow, this is what communism is all about.
Wow.
So it was a real let's go get them for me when I first got there.
Yeah.
And kind of continued throughout my service. But became very evolved of listening to all the politics of it and kind of started thinking, why are we over here, you know?
So you started asking questions as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the Stars and Stripes, Brad would know about that.
Oh, please.
And I believe that came out once a week, and it was the paper, the military paper.
I think it was the best paper ever published.
It was.
Really,
it
seriously.
Really was. And you get that, and that would give you stories about what's going on back here, you know. And a little side bar on that, the one thing that was, you would get the Stars and Stripes, and you would look in the column, and it would list the KIAs and the MIAs and all that. And first thing you did, just naturally, you'd go down that list and say, oh, there's my buddy from flight school or this one. And it was like, I remember doing that all the time, opening that page and looking, you know.
And I remember in the Corps that we'd get the Stars and Stripes right here, too.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had them here, too.
Well, it was, and that would talk some politics.
Right.
And, you know, we're getting out pretty soon. You're going to be going home. You're going to be doing this, which really never happened. So.
Were you aware of what was going on with protests back in this country when you were in Vietnam serving?
Yes, but not to the extent that it was going on. I mean, they talked about the protests and everything. And, geez, in 68, Martin Luther King was killed.
Yeah.
Bobby Kennedy was killed. You know, so things were going on. But, I mean, the Stars and Stripes didn't really get in depth as to the extent of all the protests.
Right.
They didn't.
No.
And so when I got home, then I realized it. And it was an eye-opener, big time. It was like it carried on, too, because I went into federal service right after the military. And, I went into the FBI. And then going through training in Washington in 69 when I got out of the military, protests were all over Washington then. So walked right into that one.
Yeah. Okay, Don, hold on. We're going to take a break. Brad, I know we have a traffic update. Brad, back in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, U.S. Army veteran Don Brutnell served the U.S. Army in Vietnam. And, of course, Ken Burns and his documentary are going to be premiering this weekend about Vietnam. What do you think that documentary will do to the subject of Vietnam some 50, 60 years after, Don?
Well, it's sure going to educate a lot of the youth of today that have no idea what happened in Vietnam. I mean, they'll hear what, you know, Vietnam this, Vietnam, but they don't really know what was going on. So it'll educate that group, the people in college. I mean, and below.
And Burns is the best.
Oh, the Burns is the best.
Unbelievable.
Every show he does, the sports, everything. The guy's spot on, as they say. And I saw the trailer that's on PBS.
Yep.
And it looks like he's covering it all. And it's going to get into the combat side of it. It's going to get into what was going on in this country and protest, et cetera. Going to get into all the politics of Washington, what was happening between the politicians and the generals. I really do believe it'll be the best documentary ever about Vietnam from what I saw in the trailer and what I've read. That's what I think. And I really look forward to it. It should be great. It should be good. And he is the best.
No question. Yeah. And I was telling Dan, I get Yankee Magazine, and they had a big story on him in Yankee Magazine this month.
Oh, I got to get that.
Just tremendous.
Yeah.
Tremendous story.
I guess you said he's from New England?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Vermont.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But, yeah, I look forward to it. And I think it'll be an eye-opener as to what was going on over there. I mean, 50 years ago, that blows me away that I was there. It's hard to believe, but it's true, you know, how time flies. Now, when I went there, I was 23. And I had a 3-month-old son that stayed here, and off I went. And at 23, you could do anything.
Wow.
And really, the fear factor. I don't know.
You didn't have that.
No, I really didn't. And
were you shot at?
Oh yeah.
What was that like?
different. It was. When you ducked a lot. Yeah. You ducked a lot.
But you shot at as you were piloting the helicopter.
Right. And took a number of hits and went down a couple of times, but it was like, when I first went over there, I flew what they call slicks, and Slicks were troop carrying, resupply, blah, blah. And that's primarily we got shot at a lot during that, coming into landing zones and taking off out of landing zones. And I said, wait a minute. We also have a platoon here that's a gunship platoon. That's what I want. So did a little politicking, and then I became platoon commander of the gunships. We could shoot back.
Right.
And that was good. We'd escort. We'd prep landing zones. A lot of different. So I did about 9 months in guns, they call it.
Right.
And the rest of the time in troop carrying and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was the one thing, and I look back at Vietnam, we being in the aviation unit, and we had our moments, of course, but the infantry, your Marines, your Army, your whatever, excuse me, those were the guys that really, to me, experienced the Vietnam War. Mm. All right? Not so much me. I'm above it.
Nah.
I'm putting people in, getting them out, prepping areas, not really seeing the enemy face-to-face. These guys did. They were out for weeks at a time. No showers, no nothing. Sea rations, living in the jungle.
Snakes. I heard the snakes were a big problem.
Bamboo vipers, yeah. They're little teeny things.
Yeah.
And they'd put them in the holes where the tunnel rats would go looking, and they'd be met with the tunnel of the snakes in the holes and stuff like that.
Wow.
And so the infantry guys, and again, Marines and stuff, when I was when I first got there, in 67 is when we had to go out and support the Marines at Khe Sanh.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are crazy. These guys are, I went in there and we flew in, and as soon as we got in there, right up the draw came all the clouds and all the rain, and we got grounded. We couldn't get out of there. So now we have to spend an evening with the Marines in Khe Sanh. Never again would I want to do that.
Wow.
They're up on smoking cigarettes. You know, I'm buried in the deepest foxhole I can get. You know, they're up there just sitting around, mortars flying all around. And I'm thinking, man, these guys are different, you know. But true soldiers. Really, really good. But that was the most, not entertaining, I mean, but it was really to watch these guys operate up there in those circumstances day in and day out. And I just had total respect for what they were doing.
From a combat perspective, were we winning the Vietnam War?
Were we winning? We were winning battles, you know, the ones I was involved in, we were winning, but we were winning the war. It didn't seem like we were. It just seemed like no matter what we did, they continued to do what they wanted to do. And again, the biggest example of that would be Tet. I was there for Tet. And we thought we were doing a good job pushing them back, and whether it be the NVA up north, or the VC where we were for the most part. And all of a sudden, Tet happened. They came from everywhere. They hit the country from the north to the south.
How were they able to pull it off? In other words, getting all of their troops down into that area.
I'll tell you, Dan, when we went in, there's a place called the Oshawa Valley, and going up by Khe Sanh, we would put special forces teams in with their South Vietnamese army people or whatever these guys were. They were a little different. We would put them in, and they'd reconnoiter the whole area. And we could see when the Ho Chi Minh Trail, everyone thinks it's a little trail through the woods here in Connecticut. It's a highway. It's a road. So you could see all the way through Laos, Cambodia, all the way down. You could see convoys.
Yeah.
You could see them. We could see them. And we knew who it was, but we couldn't go in there officially. Couldn't go in.
So that's how they were able to bring the troops down for Tet.
They went from the north to the south, turned to the east, and came forward.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
so were we winning it?
But in the end, we won Tet, but we lost in the court of public opinion, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely we did. Yeah. Absolutely
that's
we did.
That's what was really, I called it the Sixth Army.
Yeah.
The public opinion.
Absolutely.
The Sixth Army.
Absolutely.
And probably the most effective one.
Sure. Sure. And you know, like, when I was there, we were working with the special forces and all these things. And I'm brand new. I don't really know what's going on. But this one special forces captain told me, He said, as long as the politicians are doing what they're doing and running this war, you ain't going to win.
Yeah.
So you could be here for your year, and you're going to go home, and you're not going to be a winner.
Yeah.
And I went, whoa. And you could tell him. I mean, it was like if we went up and just bombed Hanoi to the smithereens,
yeah.
it would been over.
Yeah.
It would have been over. You know, and I don't think China would have jumped in. But it was just bomb, stop.
Right.
Bomb, stop.
Mm-hmm.
Then they stopped the bombing in 69.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So politics played a big part.
Played a major part, obviously. I mean, it is the old line. We essentially fought that war with one arm tied behind our back.
There you go, Dan.
Perfectly said. Yeah. Perfectly said.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So how was the morale of the troops essentially feeling as if the politics had entered into this?
You were so busy in what you were doing, you really, really didn't get into the politics. Maybe over the club having a few beers, you talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to remember, too, most of the guys in our company, the crew members, which were awesome, the crew chiefs and the gunners and all that, they were like 18 years old.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, and the other side of flying, I was a commission officer, but the majority of pilots over there were warrant officers, mm-hmm. right? And they were young. They were 19, 20 years old. Not that I was old at 23. But politics to them was, you know, let's go out. It was kind of exciting, you know,
right.
get in the helicopter and go out.
Sure.
But to sit around and critique. The only thing that came up all the time was, when are the peace talks going to go forward? Mm. When are they going to end this thing so we can all go home?
Right.
That did come up quite a bit.
Sure. Coming up to 8:30.
Can you stay after?
Can you stay?
Sure.
Awesome. Oh, that's terrific.
That's great.
That's terrific.
And Brad, back in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair is U.S. Army veteran Don Brutnell, a helicopter pilot for the U.S. Army in Vietnam, talking about his service in Vietnam. One of the reasons we're focusing on Vietnam is the Ken Burns documentary on Vietnam.
This weekend.
Will premiere this weekend on PBS. Don, from a political standpoint, where did the United States screw up? Do you think?
Not letting the military run the war.
Mm-hmm.
That was easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
that was it.
Letting the military do their job, and not Westmoreland was under the thumb of Washington.
Yeah.
You know, so if they let the military do what they wanted to do, we would have won.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, we walked away. I mean, and it's you look at the wall now, 59,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my perspective.
Right.
I go down there. I've been there a few times, and I look at the wall, and I see the name, and I think, why is that up there?
Yeah.
Why 59,000 guys?
Yeah.
And we walked away. So,
have we learned as a country to treat our Vietnam War veterans with dignity?
Yes. No. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's turned right around. I mean, I walked into your studio this morning, and when I walked in, the young man came up to me and said, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
I mean, that never happened back in my era of coming back from Vietnam. It really didn't. And people were, you were in Vietnam, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
And that's happened until it didn't happen then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a nice thing to hear from people, that people did appreciate. It wasn't my decision to go to war in Vietnam.
Right.
You know, I was sent there to represent our country. So I did my duty, as did all those other guys, the millions that were over there.
Mm-hmm.
And when they came back, it's like they were being booed and harassed for doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
They were there at the command of the U.S. government to do what they were supposed to do, and they did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Again, when you think of that particular era compared to some of the other battles that we fought, it seems like you were in another world.
Oh, you definitely. Absolutely over there. Definitely.
And while you were here, you felt the same way.
Yeah, when you got that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, people, the young people more so, did not understand that war. They had no idea, why are we there? You know, and nobody was giving them the answers, real good answers, as to why we're there. You know, we're stopping communism. Did we? And so, yeah, it was a whole different thing compared to World War II, you know, a whole different thing. There was a mission there. Everyone knew what we were doing, how that was going to be done, and laid right out by the military. Mm-hmm. And that was the difference between that and Vietnam. Vietnam was, it was run on TV.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, my brother was in Vietnam, 66 to 67. I was there 67, 68. We had an overlap. And I always think about my parents, what they had to go through.
Right.
I mean, what? You know, and then watching on TV. And it was laid right out. The battles were laid out. You had Walter Cronkite, Dan
yep.
Rather, right there, people being killed.
Yeah.
And they're sitting at home watching the whole war on TV, which incited, I think, a lot of activity here in the United States.
And every week Cronkite's giving the body count, and then he comes back after the
absolutely.
Tet Offensive, and he gives the editorial, we need to get out of Vietnam.
Absolutely. And
I remember that
yeah.
so well.
And Tet was a very good example of that because they said, oh, we've been over here all this time. They just walked in and blew us apart in different areas, all from the north to the south. Why are we here?
Nah.
Let's get out of here.
Right.
And then that incited even more activity on the streets back in the United States.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see how Burns puts this together. But I can imagine that you will feel sometime during this show of his documentary, that you are there.
I'm sure you will. Or I will.
Yep.
I'm sure.
You will.
Yeah. And I hope all the kids in high school and maybe college watch this thing and just get an idea of what went on in Vietnam. I mean, I think that's really, really, really important.
Right.
Because most of them don't know. Most of them don't know.
So now you come back to the United States. You were in ROTC. It looks as if you're going to pursue this career in the Army. What happened?
Well, I came back and got assigned to Virginia. And then during that period of time, I was had my interviews with the upper echelon. And for me to go forward in rank, et cetera, I just had to go back to Vietnam in about 18 months. I chose not to.
don't blame you.
Oh, no. So that was so I didn't. And on the base, I ran into an individual one night and started chatting. He was a FBI agent assigned to Norfolk, Virginia. And we talked. He said, why don't you make an application to the FBI? They're doing some hiring. I did. Luckily, I was accepted. So I got out of the service in very end of September of 69, I'm sorry. And then in October of 69, I went into the FBI.
How long were you in the FBI?
27 years.
27 years.
Yep.
Wow.
Where were you stationed in the FBI?
Indianapolis, Indiana. Detroit, Michigan. That was lovely. Syracuse, New York. And then finally, New Haven, Connecticut, which we covered the state of Connecticut.
What was that like working for the FBI?
I loved it. It was the greatest job in the world. As I always said, I got up every day, and this is not, this is true. I got up every day looking forward to going to work. I really did.
Not many people can say that about their jobs.
I loved it. The people I worked with, the missions that we had in the FBI.
What kind of missions?
Well, my focus, almost my whole career was organized crime.
Yeah.
So I had that, and then we got into the narcotics investigations, and I did undercover investigations, and so it was great. I mean, it was tremendous. You know, I loved it.
Okay, we're going to put you on the hot seat a little bit, and if you can't, you can't. Can you talk about any organized crime cases you worked on?
Well, the biggest one I did was the Nick Bianco case, which was Billy Grasso. And we went after the mob in New England, and we got him. That was a great case. It was Grasso, all the Connecticut people, Rhode Island people, some Boston people. And we had a major trial went on for months in Hartford, and they were all found guilty. So that was a great one.
Did you ever fear for your life?
No. No. Mm-hmm. Nope. I think a lot of that's TV, you know. But the guys that, in law enforcement anyway, that have to fear for their life really are the state police, the local police, those guys that are out there not knowing who's in that house on a domestic or who's in that car on a stop, you know. With us, we planned it out. You know, we had the resources, and it was just we knew exactly what was going on during arrest. But the locals in the state have the tough job.
This is why I always say the police, it's tough I mean, especially they're going through something too.
Oh,
now.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Absolutely, they are. And they're criticized for many, many things they do that they've done right, but the criticism makes it look like they did it wrong. And
well, that's the media.
And all with all these mini cams and everything, they're totally under the watchful eye.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, that's a tough, tough job. Ours was easy. Theirs was the hard job. Mm-hmm. Still is.
Yeah.
Still is.
What about the drug situation? Can you talk about some of the cases you worked on in that area?
Well, again, when I was working on it, DEA was the primary federal, agency working narcotics here. The FBI got into it more around 85, 86. So, we just worked hand in hand on task force with the DEA, with the state, with the locals, supporting them with our resources. And we worked Colombian cases and stuff, but specific ones, not really. It was just all task force activity throughout the state.
What do you think about now what's going on with the drug culture, the opioids, heroin, all of that? You're on the sidelines now, but I'm sure you have an opinion.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just so prevalent now. I mean, you just look at the numbers of the young people and some older that are dying from this stuff that's so accessible. And it's accessible because it's cheap. It's easy to get. The price on the street is dropped. Heroin is very inexpensive, you know. And, you know, here's a good story. I talked to an individual whose son had come back from Afghanistan. And she was just saying how tough it was over there. He was out there in a Hyundai there where they're looking for the road bombs and stuff. He came back and PTSD
yeah.
And from that, but he was in medical treatment and they had him get morphine. And some other things like that.
Morphine.
And then he got, you're out. You know, he got discharged. He was a Marine, by the way. He got discharged and now he's lacking that narcotic to keep him going. And he became addicted to heroin on the street. So,
you know, when you think about where we are now, when you think about the state of Connecticut, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Here in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Drugs, Dan and I have done programs on this. And it's and I have met several. And you don't know what to do.
You don't. Education. Is the
how are these drugs getting into the country?
Through Mexico.
Through Mexico?
Yeah. They come in through Colombia and then through Mexico. And so it's easy to get in.
It's an unbelievable operation, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. It really, really is.
These cartels.
Again, we go back to the old supply and demand, right? As long as there's that demand here for that kind of stuff, it's coming through Mexico.
And you can go to an apartment.
Absolutely.
In Hartford.
Absolutely.
Not far from where we are.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And find the drugs.
Go right in the street.
And a whole stack of money.
Yeah.
Well, it's motivating what is a massive underground economy.
Tremendous.
Isn't it?
Sure. But it's so, well, Brad's point, so easy to score just by walking down the street. I mean, and it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it is this major, major, major concern in this country. And I've got 11 grandkids, you know. And I tell you, I think about that all the time. They're all great kids. But what are they exposed to in their high school?
You bet.
That's what, boy, that worries me every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Great kids, but their surroundings, you know.
They're human beings.
Absolutely. Peer influence, right?
Yeah. Right, the peer influence. Can we win this war on drugs? I mean, some people are saying the way to win it is to legalize a lot of this stuff.
I don't.
And I don't, and Dan doesn't either.
No. If the resources are there, I think you can get a cap on it. You can control it more, but to eradicate it all, no, I don't think so. Been around too long.
I mean, the way, and all you have to do is look at some of the history in some of these states.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, it is.
What has happened to these kids.
It is. And that's... The peer influence, too, and what's going on. It's just, it's disheartening. That's what
it is.
You know?
Yeah. Don, we're running out of time. Anything else you'd like to say to sum up our interview?
No, I guess,
I'm glad he came.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah.
I would encourage, everybody, to get their whole family old enough to watch this thing with Burns. I think it'll be an eye-opener,
and it'll
bring it right to reality of what happened, what went wrong, what could have gone right, yada, yada. And I think it's important to watch this show.
Got about
glad that you were with
yes,
Marines.
And thank you for your service.
Well, thank you very much.
I know we got less than a minute left, but people are probably asking, well, did he ever meet J. Edgar Hoover? He was in the FBI, so let me ask you that question.
And he was. When I came in, he was the director, and it was funny because the counselors in your class were scared to death that you were going to meet him and they wouldn't be around, and that you were going to say something to totally embarrass them. They'd get fired, get sent to Butte, Montana, or something like that. But I saw him, in the company of him. But I'll be honest with you, I really liked working under J. Edgar Hoover. I did.
What a great way to end the interview. Don Brutnell, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it very much. There you go.
All right. Coming up to 10 minutes before the hour of 9 o'clock. What an hour. Oh, my God, my God. And we'll be right back, my friends, with more. Stay with us. More to come.